Hello and welcome back. Continuing with Chapter 5 Pioneers, we will be reading from page 306 to 331 today. So let's begin. He continued in easily comprehensible terms. For example, if someone who had always lived like a queen and enjoyed every luxury were to say, "I became happy as a result of taking faith," no one would bat an eye. But if a person who is sick, whose family is poor, and who is shunned by people because of these things, becomes happy through practicing faith, and goes on to become a leader in society, this will be splendid proof of the greatness of Buddhism. Don't you agree that this would make others want to practice Buddhism too? By triumphing over great poverty, a person who has been poor can give hope to others who are struggling with financial hardship. By regaining vitality and good health, someone who has been battling illness can light a flame of courage in the hearts of those in similar straits. By creating a happy and harmonious family, a person who has suffered great anguish over discord in the same home can become a model for others plagued by family problems. Similarly, if you, a woman who has been left widowed in a foreign land where she does not speak the language, become happy and raise your children to be fine adults, you will be a shining example for all women who have lost their husbands. Even those who don't practice faith will admire you and come to seek your advice. So you see, the deeper and greater the sufferings, the more magnificently one can show proof of the powerful benefit of Buddhism. You could say that karma is another name for mission. I myself am the son of a poor seaweed processor. I worked by Mr. Toda's side throughout the bitter trials of his company's bankruptcy, even though I was suffering from frail health and a tubercular condition at the time. Because I have experienced hardship and suffering just like everyone else, I can take the lead for the Kosen Rufu movement in this way as a representative of the common people. As she listened to Shinichi's explanation, the women nodded repeatedly. The faces of the participants had also grown increasingly animated. All of them had been through great hardships, groaning under the weight of each day's arduous challenges. Shinichi took a sip of water and said with even greater force, "Each of you may think you have just happened to come to Brazil as a result of your respective circumstances. But this is not the case. You have been born as bodhisattvas of the earth in order to achieve Kosen Rufu in Brazil, to lead the people of this country to happiness, and to create an eternal paradise in this land. Indeed, you have been chosen by Nichiren Daishonin to be here. When you realize your great mission as bodhisattvas of the earth and dedicate your lives to Kosen Rufu, the sun that has existed within you since time without beginning will begin to shine forth. All offenses you have committed in past lifetimes will vanish like mist, and you will embark upon wonderful lives permeated by deep joy and happiness." Smiling warmly at the woman, Shinichi Yamamoto continued, "Viewed from the profound perspective of Buddhism, your suffering is like that portrayed by a brilliant, highly paid stage actress cast in the role of a tragic heroine. When the play is finished, the actress goes home to a life of ease and comfort. Your life is the same. Moreover, the story you play out on the stage of life's theatre will have a happy ending. There is no need to worry. You will definitely become happy. I say this with absolute certainty. Just as a great actress relishes performing her tragic role, please rise from the depths of your sorrow to boldly act out a magnificent drama of human revolution. All people are pioneers travelling the unknown frontiers of life. Therefore, it is up to you alone to cultivate and develop your own life. You must wield the hoe of faith, sow the seeds of happiness, and persevere tenaciously. The sweat of your efforts for Kosen Rufu will become precious gems of good fortune, brilliantly dignifying your life forever. Please become the happiest person in Brazil." When Shinichi had finished speaking, the woman responded cheerfully, "Yes, I will." The audience broke into applause, expressing not only their agreement with what Shinichi had said, but also their genuine delight at the woman's newfound resolve. Shinichi fielded two or three more questions before it was time to announce the establishment of the new chapter. The first chapter outside of Japan was about to be born. "I hereby announce the establishment of a chapter here in Brazil." Shinichi's proclamation was met with a wild storm of applause. This discussion meeting was therefore effectively the first Brazilian general meeting as well as an inaugural chapter meeting. Three districts were also established on this occasion: the Sao Paulo, Campinas, and Alua districts. Appointed to the positions of chapter chief and women's division chapter chief were a married couple who ran a business manufacturing and selling transistor radios. The position of young men's division chief, meanwhile, went to E.G. Gono, a youth had been a member of the Soka Gakkai brass band while still in Japan. Shinichi closed his words by saying, "Brazil is now a forerunner in the Kosenrufu movement among countries outside Japan. There is infinite potential here as pioneers of peace and happiness. Please blaze the path of Kosenrufu in Brazil in my stead. Please do your best." There was more applause. Each of these humble pioneers, dressed in shabby suits that had seen better days, made a passionate new pledge. Warm tears welled in their eyes, glittering brightly against their deeply sunburnt faces. The sun of Kosenrufu had now truly risen over the untamed frontiers of Brazil. After the discussion meeting had ended, an elderly man approached Shinichi, accompanied by one of the members. The man was sturdily built, with a calm and dignified demeanor. Throughout the meeting, he had sat listening with a slightly defiant posture, his expression serious, as if carefully trying to discern something. Shinichi had been wondering who he was. The man was president of the Japanese society in an area not far from Sao Paulo. His face flushed with enthusiasm as he said to Shinichi, "I really heard something wonderful today. Many religions from Japan have made their way to Brazil. During the war, I was a member of one of these religious organizations. But it just turned out to be a sham, concerned only with glorifying the war and making money by cleverly gaining favor with people. If you gave a lot of money, the leaders of the organization would visit you frequently and talk to you about various things. But if the amount you gave was small, they looked openly disgruntled and would then completely ignore you. Nor did they make the slightest effort to lend a helping hand to the poor. Religion ought to have compassion and serve all people, but this group just behaved as I have described. The corruption of Japanese religion at work here in Brazil is deplorable. I hope you will forgive me, but based on my past experience, I must admit that I listened to today's meeting thinking that you people must be exactly the same as all the others." Shinichi said to the man with a smile, "I'd be most happy to hear any opinions or criticisms you might have." "No, no. I was most favorably impressed. After I listened to everything that was said, I thought to myself, this is the genuine article. There's no doubt about it. I'd heard about the Soka Gakkai from others, but everyone apart from the members was very negative about it. Some leaders from other religious organizations even came to warn me that the Soka Gakkai propagates a religion that condones violence and that we mustn't let it spread. But witnessing today's meeting, I believe I have obtained ample evidence that your group upholds a religion genuinely concerned with helping ordinary people." "That's very kind of you to say so. Therefore, as of today, I would like to join you and exert myself diligently in the practice of this faith," he declared, gazing steadily at Shinichi, his intelligent eyes shining brightly. "Taking faith is no small matter," Shinichi responded. "It requires considerable resolve." The man looked at Shinichi questioningly. "What do you mean by considerable resolve?" "A true religion," Shinichi said, "is invariably subject to attacks, to persecutions. Unless you are resolved to endure these things, you will be unable to carry through with your faith. Are you prepared to accept this? The man held an important position in one of the local Japanese societies. Most members would have delightedly accepted his decision to join. Shinichi, however, considering the man's situation, held back from doing so. There is no special or easy path in faith. Those who begin faith half-heartedly are often swayed by trivial things. If this should cause them to forsake their practice, then it is meaningless for them to have taken faith in the first place. In that case, it would only make them unhappy. The man replied resolutely, "Of course, if people's hearts have grown hard and cynical, they will naturally try to oust and heap abuse and criticism on that which is correct. Particularly if the Soka Gakkai keeps growing the way it is, fear and jealousy will prompt increasing attacks against it. I'm ashamed to say that backstabbing is rampant in the Japanese community in Brazil. Perhaps because they are conscious of being foreigners and having a weak position in society, they are quick to side with those who yield authority and, borrowing their strength, try to bring others down. It's truly lamentable. Therefore, I am fully prepared for the Soka Gakkai to be subject to persecution, especially since there are so many spurious religions all around. For that same reason, however, I would like to practice correct faith." The man was completely earnest. "I understand. If you have the solid determination to do so, then please join us and do your best to exert yourself in faith. I congratulate you from the bottom of my heart on the start of your new life." The man then firmly shook the hand that Shinichi held out to him. Shinichi had deep respect for the man's keen perception. The first and most important mission of religion is to save those who are suffering. A true religion is one that extends a helping hand to the poor and the sick. The Soka Gakkai was devoting its entire energies to saving those who were suffering. Nevertheless, in Japanese society, the organization was constantly derided as an organization of the poor and sick. It was a testimony to the man's outstanding vision that, despite all this, he concluded in light of the true mission of the religion that the Soka Gakkai was indeed promoting a genuine religion. That evening, Shinichi Yamamoto invited some of the newly appointed leaders out for dinner at a Japanese restaurant to celebrate this fresh beginning for Brazil. He wanted to wholeheartedly encourage and show his appreciation to the friends who would shoulder the future of this new realm for Kōsan Rufu. The conversation during the dinner with Shinichi was lively and amiable. Shinichi spoke with Aiji Gohono, the new leader of the young men's division, a sensitive-looking youth. "What kind of work are you doing now?" he asked. "I make a living by playing the trumpet." "I see. It must be hard making ends meet. Do you speak Portuguese?" "I attended Portuguese language classes in Japan for 2 or 3 months, so I understand a little." "That's not enough if you hope to become an asset for Kōsan Rufu. Please study hard and master Portuguese. This will be the first step to fulfilling your mission." Shinichi had met and encouraged the young man a number of times in Japan. At that time, Gono was not only an active member of the Soka Gakkai's brass band, but working hard as a group chief in the young men's division. The young man had one dream, to become a jazz musician. In those days, however, few in Japan appreciated jazz as a valid form of music. The word jazz usually evoked looks of disapproval. Even Gono himself wondered how he could contribute to Kōsan Rufu in his chosen field. Finally, after a lot of soul-searching about his future, he sought guidance from Shinichi Yamamoto, then the youth division chief of staff. At that time, Shinichi had told him, "If jazz really strikes a chord in your heart, and if you are absolutely determined to proceed in this field, then go ahead and challenge it. Even if by some chance you should not be successful, as long as you always cherish a desire for Kōsan Rufu in your heart, then all your experiences in life will serve you well. In Buddhism, nothing is ever wasted." Kono made up his mind. If he were to study jazz in earnest, he would have to go to the United States, the birthplace and center for that musical form. But he didn't have the money to do so. After doing some checking, however, he found that people wishing to emigrate to Brazil were eligible to apply for a loan to cover their travel expenses. Kono thought that he would first go to Brazil and then make his way to the United States from there. In mid-July of that year, 2 months after Shinichi had become Soka Gakkai president, Kono set sail from Yokohama, arriving in the port of Santos near Sao Paulo at the beginning of September. One day, shortly after his arrival in Sao Paulo, as he was wandering through the Asian section of the town, Eiji Kono came across a youth wearing a Soka Gakkai pin on his lapel. From this member, he learned of President Yamamoto's imminent visit. Kono joined in the preparations to welcome the Soka Gakkai leader. It was he who had taught the members Gakkai songs and conducted the chorus that greeted Shinichi at the airport. Looking at him now, Shinichi thought that Gono's true mission had all along been to work for Kosen Rufu right here in Brazil. The question was when he would come to realize that. Shinichi had earlier mentioned the importance of learning Portuguese to Kono out of his sincere hope that the youth would awaken to his mission as soon as possible. As the meal was drawing to a close, Shinichi spoke, his words conveying profound expectations. "The Kosen Rufu movement here in Brazil will develop dramatically in the future. It is important that, as leaders, you be determined to serve as the soil for Kosen Rufu in Brazil, in which members who appear later can grow and blossom, rather than strive to become flowers and fruit yourselves. It is also important to clearly convey to others how wonderful it is to be a part of the Soka Gakkai and dedicate your lives to the cause of Kosen Rufu." A drop of dew on a leaf soon vanishes, but the waters of the ocean encompass the globe. The Soka Gakkai, the organization of Kosen Rufu, allows us to open the vast, ocean-like potential within our lives and elevate our state of life. I hope each of you will make a personal determination that, no matter what happens, you will never leave the Soka Gakkai. When leaders whose job it is to guide others in faith stop practicing and let down or betray their fellow members, they commit a grave offense. It is quite likely that the Soka Gakkai will encounter various forms of attack in the future. There will definitely be those who seek to undermine and disrupt the solid unity of our organization. However, true practitioners of Buddhism are those who have been forged and tested through many trials, such people which savor glory in life. Benzo Yoda, an early pioneer of Japan's northernmost island of Hokkaido, wrote the following poem. "Young hero, heart resolved, facing the northern seas, wind howl as you like, waves rage as you will." I hope all of you will embrace the same spirit and always dedicate yourselves to blazing the trail for Kosen Rufu, and in doing so write a brilliant poem of your pioneering struggles. Shinichi had left his meal practically untouched, his intense fatigue robbing him of any appetite. His heart, however, was happy and refreshed. His entire being was filled with a deep sense of satisfaction at having striven with every ounce of his energy to secure the foundations for the great future development of the Kosen Rufu movement in Brazil. On October 21st, the following day, Shinichi Yamamoto and his party left Brazil to return to the United States. At 11:30 that morning, around 24 members saw Shinichi and the others off as they boarded a bus in front of the Pan American office in Sao Paulo for the airport in Campinas. Arriving at the airport, the group learned that their flight had been delayed considerably. It was 3 p.m. by the time they were finally airborne. As the onset of night darkened the sky around them, they landed for refueling at the El Dorado Airport in Bogota, Colombia. There, they had to disembark and wait in the lounge. The airport was deserted. Shinichi stepped outside the airport building for a moment. He looked up at a night sky filled with countless shimmering stars that stretched as far as the eye could see. The airport was named after El Dorado, the mythical city of gold fabled to exist in the New World. Gazing at the beautiful sky dusted with silver light, he felt as if he were indeed standing in the land of El Dorado. Shinichi recalled that the French philosopher Voltaire, in his novel Candide, had written of a wondrous land known as El Dorado, hidden deep in South America. It was portrayed as a land of fabulous riches where children wore robes of gold and played with gems as other children played with stones. In addition to enjoying immense material wealth, everyone, from the king down to the ordinary citizens, was a stranger to conflict and discord. In El Dorado, there were no lawsuits, courts, or prisons. In Voltaire's portrayal, it was a kingdom overflowing with trust and goodwill, a place where people's hearts were even richer than the material wealth they possessed. Without spiritual wealth, it would not be a true El Dorado. Shinichi's goal of accomplishing Kōsan Rūfu was nothing other than the construction of just such a golden realm. Right now, he thought, there are no members here in Colombia. But someday, the time would definitely come when courageous bodhisattvas of the earth would, no, must, appear in this land and joyously conduct their activities. Shinichi chanted Daimoku as he gazed up at the sky. From that time on, while praying for the peace and prosperity of Colombia, Shinichi as an ordinary citizen began working to foster friendly ties with the South American country. In 1990, 30 years after he first set foot on the Colombian soil, the Colombian Gold Exhibition was shown at the Tokyo Fuji Art Museum, which he founded. As a result, 517 priceless Colombian treasures, including some of the world's largest uncut emeralds never before shown outside Colombia, were put on display to the Japanese public, symbolizing the trust and friendship between the two countries. 3 years later, in 1993, Shinichi made his first official visit to Colombia and established the first SGI chapter in that country. The plane carrying Shinichi and his party arrived at New York's Idlewild International Airport, now John F. Kennedy International Airport, shortly after 2 a.m. on October 22nd, several hours behind schedule. Susumu Aota and Nagayasu Masaki were waiting to welcome them at the airport, along with Yukiko Nishino and other members from the New York area. When Shinichi saw their faces, he smiled and said, "Sorry to have kept you waiting so long. We are all back safe and well. Thank you." Although he looked drawn, the members were relieved to hear Shinichi's high-spirited voice. The sight of his gallant presence filled them with courage. "Sensei, you must be exhausted. Please accept these rice balls," said Yukiko Nishino, offering Shinichi a small bundle that she had prepared for him and his party. "Thank you. That's very thoughtful. I am deeply touched by your kindness." When Shinichi and the others later ate them back at their hotel, these rice balls, with their centers of pickled plum, seemed exceptionally delicious. About 10 hours later, Shinichi and his party were on their way from New York to Los Angeles. Their plane arrived in the West Coast city at 2:30 p.m. The group had spent most of the time during their short stopover in New York discussing the formation of a chapter in Los Angeles and carefully deliberating over the selection of leaders. On arriving at the airport in Los Angeles, they were greeted by a chorus of about 24 members singing a Gakkai song. As he approached where they were standing, Shinichi joined them in their passionate singing. The members' voices faltered repeatedly as they tried to stem the tears that welled forth out of their joy to be welcoming their president. In the meantime, several other members raced up to them, heavily out of breath. It was the very first time that many of them had been to the airport, and trying to find their way around the large terminal had made them late. Because travel from Japan to the United States in those days was primarily by sea, a journey of about 2 weeks, the airport was a totally unfamiliar place for most of them. Quite a few weren't even aware that there were different lobbies for arrivals and departures. When the singing ended, Shinichi said, "Thank you so much. I appreciate all your hard work." From the back of the group of members, someone suddenly called out, "Sensei!" Making her way through the small crowd of people, a woman approached Shinichi. A man accompanied her. "Sensei, I've brought my husband," she declared cheerfully. When Shinichi saw the woman, he smiled and said, "Thank you for coming to see me." The woman's name was Take Hanamura. She had moved to the United States several years before, where she had somehow managed to maintain her practice. In the spring of the previous year, during a short visit to Japan, she had stopped by the Soka Gakkai headquarters with her mother. Shinichi had encouraged her on that occasion and promised, "I'm thinking of visiting America in October of next year. Let's meet again over there." The woman had been surprised to hear that Shinichi was planning to visit the United States. She had never imagined that the top leader of the Soka Gakkai would travel all that way. She had also told Shinichi on that occasion that her husband was not a member. "Well, then, could you introduce me to him when I come?" he had asked. "Yes, I'd be delighted to," said the woman. 18 months had passed since then. Now, Takae Hanamura introduced her husband, who had been standing behind her, to Shinichi. "This is my husband, Michiaki. I'm pleased to meet you. Thank you very much for coming all this way. I'm Shinichi Yamamoto, president of the Soka Gakkai." Shinichi greeted him courteously and shook his hand. The man gazed at Shinichi in stunned surprise. "I hope to see you again later at the discussion meeting," said Shinichi, smiling. Michiaki Hanamura nodded silently. His mind was in turmoil. He had always thought there was something questionable about the Soka Gakkai. Then, his wife had insisted that they go to the airport to meet the president of that very organization. He had gone only with great reluctance. Now, having met Shinichi in person, however, Michiaki found him to be a well-mannered and stalwart young man, a far cry from the image he had formed of him as an authoritarian religious leader. He actually found something very appealing about Shinichi. Hence his bewilderment and confusion at the seeming disparity. Many people in society form their image of the Soka Gakkai based on prejudiced reports and spurious rumors circulated by certain segments of the mass media. Once preconceptions are in place, it is difficult for people to make a fair and impartial appraisal. The ultimate means of breaking through such bias is dialogue with someone possessed of solid character that has been forged and polished through faith. The brilliant light of one's character can overturn malicious criticisms and give eloquent voice to the truth. As the saying goes, seeing is believing. For that reason too, it is vital that leaders meet directly with many people and engage them in dialogue. After arriving at their hotel from the airport, Shinichi met and interviewed key members in the Los Angeles area for leadership positions in the new chapter that was about to be established during the short interval before the discussion meeting. The venue for the discussion meeting was the Sun Building in Little Tokyo, the center of LA's Japanese American community. When Shinichi arrived, a young woman at the reception greeted him using a standard polite Japanese expression. "Hello, you must be tired." "You can say that again. I'm really worn out," replied Shinichi, smiling. A bright smile lit the young woman's face, the warmth of his response putting her at ease. More than 100 people crowded into the meeting room. A table covered with a white cloth had been placed at the front for the speakers, while on the wall behind it hung a photo of Josei Toda and calligraphy of the Japanese characters for unity. The meeting layout was modeled after the memorable Spring General Meeting of May 3, 1958, when Shinichi announced his vision for the future based on the concept of seven bells, inspiring the members to surmount their deep sorrow over President Toda's passing and advance with new determination. In addition, the national flags of the United States and Japan had been hung on either side of the Japanese characters for unity. Even a pine bonsai tree had been placed to one side of the speaker's table. There was also a vertical banner that read in Japanese calligraphy, Los Angeles Kickoff Meeting. Except for the American flag, the meeting could have been taking place in Japan. Since almost all the members who had been working on the preparations for this meeting were originally from Japan, it was perhaps only natural that they should have chosen this way to express their joy and enthusiasm. However, there is no need to strive for such uniformity, Shinichi thought, to follow the way things are done in Japan, right down to the last detail. Rather, he felt, the culture, traditions and character of people in each country should be kept alive and be reflected and expressed in the organization. Shinichi appreciated the spirit behind their efforts. There were many members in the Los Angeles area, the majority of whom were from Japan. These members contacted each other and organized discussion meetings quite regularly. Even though none of the members possessed particularly outstanding leadership skills, through their respective experiences, each had firmly established a conviction that benefit definitely accrues when one earnestly perseveres in faith. Actual experience speaks more eloquently than a million words of theory. The members in LA encouraged each other in their practice by sharing their experiences of faith. Here, too, as in the other cities Shinichi had visited in the United States, the leading force in activities were Japanese women who had moved to this country as a result of marrying American citizens. Among the Los Angeles members was a woman named Kazuko Elik. She was a nurse who had taken faith in Nichiren Daishonin's Buddhism in Japan in August 1954, inspired by her mother having overcome palsy as a result of this faith. The following year, an American working for the US military's broadcasting network in Japan had asked her to marry him, and she accepted his proposal. However, his mother violently opposed the marriage. Unable to let go of her anger towards Japan, America's enemy during the war, she had sent Kazuko a letter in which she wrote, "I'm not going to have my son marry a Jap." Since Kazuko didn't know English, she got someone to translate it. But Kazuko was not going to let the woman get the better of her. When she received this letter, she promptly sent off her reply, "Shut up, Yankee. Don't tell me what to do." The war between Japan and the United States was still raging between this would-be Japanese bride and her future American mother-in-law. Kazuko's husband went ahead and completed all the paperwork for their marriage and then returned to the United States alone to wait until the immigration authorities granted his wife permission to join him there. But then it was discovered that she had tuberculosis, regarded in those days as an incurable disease, and her application to enter the United States was denied. As a nurse, Kazuko was well aware how serious an illness like tuberculosis could be. She felt as if the world around her had suddenly turned dark, but she refused to admit defeat. "I have faith," she thought. She applied herself to her practice with a vengeance, energetically introducing others to Daishonin's Buddhism and encouraging her fellow members. Kazuko and her mother-in-law continued their blistering mutual assaults through the mail for some time, but when the mother-in-law learned that Kazuko was a nurse, her attitude suddenly changed. It turned out that she herself had been a nurse for many years. Her mother-in-law now wrote, "Please get well and come to America as soon as possible." She opened her heart and gave her blessing to the marriage. Kazuko wept when she read the letter, as deep gratitude for great benefit of the Gohonzon welled up within her. She recovered steadily from her illness, growing healthier each day. Having submitted all the paperwork necessary to move to America, she then checked into the U.S. military hospital in Kanagawa Prefecture for tests. Although her condition had markedly improved, she was not yet completely cured. From Kanagawa, she was flown by military airplane via Hawaii to San Francisco, where she was placed in a suburban hospital. Her recovery here was the final hurdle to beginning her new life in America. The doctor informed Kazuko that she would have to stay in the hospital for a month. The cost would be around $500. All she had, however, was $150. Her husband, who had returned to the United States ahead of her, was struggling financially, and the money she had brought with her was supposed to be a precious nest egg for the start of their new married life together. "I can't afford to stay in the hospital that long," she thought. "With faith, I'm going to recover from this illness in 1 week, no matter what." In her hospital room, Kazuko Elik chanted with powerful determination. She also resolved to teach people at the hospital about her faith. But she did not speak English. Using a Japanese English dictionary, she looked up words that would be useful in her propagation efforts and jotted them down on cards. Equipped with these cards, she would boldly set up out into the hospital garden and suddenly call out loudly in heavily accented English, "Listen!" With all the people in the garden looking at her in open amazement, she would continue, "Nammyoho Ringekyo, number one. If you won't go home, speak Nammyoho Ringekyo." She felt no shame or embarrassment about what people might think. She gave no thought to common sense or the social propriety to which all Sokagakai members ought to pay heed. Her sole concern was to cure her tuberculosis quickly and be released from the hospital. After making her declaration, she would return to her room in high spirits and start chanting frantically. The content of her prayer was as follows. "Gohonzon, are you listening? I have just sown the seeds of Buddhahood in the lives of 40 or 50 people. I am exerting myself in my Buddhist practice with all my might. You know that, don't you? Therefore, please promise me that I can definitely check out of the hospital in 1 week's time. And, by the way, I only have $150. Please make the hospital no more than $125. I need the remaining $25 to rent a room after I am released." She was utterly serious. Each day was devoted from morning till night to Daimoku and her somewhat unusual style of propagation. After her first week at the hospital, she received the results of her tests. It was what she had prayed for. She was going to be released. She danced for joy, and the bill for her hospital stay came to exactly $125. As she left the hospital with her husband, who had come to pick her up, people throughout the hospital leaned out of their windows and called out to her. Kazuko turned and waved energetically to them, crying out, "Hello, hello." The clamoring from the hospital ward windows was the shouts of people wanting to know Kazuko Elik's so-called magic word. "Okay, okay," she said cheerfully. She went back inside and wrote down the English spelling for Nammyoho Ringekyo on pieces of paper and went around to each ward to hand them out, emphasizing strongly as she did so, "Speak, go home." What she was trying to convey was, if you chant this phrase, you will be able to go home. It was anybody's guess, however, whether her message was actually got through. In any event, her prayers had been answered and Elik could now walk freely on American soil. With this experience as a source of inspiration, she threw herself into her activities in Los Angeles with equal enthusiasm. Besides Japanese women like herself, there were also a number of men, as well as students studying abroad, who were playing an active part in the organization by encouraging each other. The historic discussion meeting that marked the formation of Los Angeles chapter began at 6:30 p.m. Here, as on other occasions, Shinichi devoted most of the meeting to answering members' questions. As expected, many of the questions concerned illness, financial difficulties, and husbands who did not practice. Interspersing his responses with humor, Shinichi answered with embracing gentleness. Though it was a large meeting with more than 100 participants, it was pervaded by an air of warmth and friendliness. Perhaps because they were so thoroughly at ease, many people who rose to ask questions unconsciously lapsed into the dialects of their native regions in Japan. This drew bursts of good-natured laughter from their fellow members. To these people, exhausted from the struggles of daily life in a foreign country to which they were not yet accustomed, the discussion meeting was an oasis, a tranquil garden. After bringing the question and answer session to a close, Shinichi earnestly addressed the audience. "The United States is a country that enjoys one of the highest levels of material wealth in the world. I would like all of you to enjoy comfortable lives and good health. By the same token, if your hearts, which are most important, are impoverished, you cannot be truly happy. For, as the Gosho states, more precious than the treasures of the storehouse are the treasures of the body, and more precious than the treasures of the body are the treasures of the heart. People here in the United States are at last beginning to recognize this. How, then, can people enrich their hearts and cultivate spiritual wealth? You are the ones who have the answers. It is you, therefore, who shoulder America's future. In that respect, I declare that all the women who are here today are the foremost women in America. Though you may be facing various problems and sufferings right now, I hope you will remember the mission you have and each become a brilliant sun that will illuminate America with the light of happiness. With that, we come to the end of today's reading. Next time, we will be reading starting at page 331 and finishing volume 1. Reading till page 353. So I will see you next time.